Welcome everyone to the inaugural episode, I guess that's the wording I want to use, for our little podcast that we're doing called Marks on Movies. Now, for those of you that are probably wicked confused by the title, Marks on Movies, this is a little offshoot of Marks on Commentary, the wrestling podcast that's out there, for those of you that know what that is, and hopefully there are a number of you that do, but if not, hey, you're discovering something new. Give it a chance. Give it a listen. If not, that's all right. I am one of the two voices of the show, Sean, and sitting across from me is...
I'm Jason.
Yep, that's Jason, right there. You can only hear his voice, but he's sitting right in front of me.
As opposed to sitting right on top of you.
That'd be weird. But the purpose of this podcast is we have a love and affinity for film, whether not just, oh, we sit around and watch movies. No, we like love filmmaking in general and storytelling. So we thought it'd be a good chance to express which movies we love, why we love them, you know, kind of do retrospective pieces, all sorts of stuff. This episode is just kind of, you know, getting up to the plate, I guess you could say, before we knock out some home runs. But just kind of give people a feel of what we'll be talking about. And I guess we could kind of explain our stories as to why, what made us movie lovers. So,
Jason. If that's not a broad enough.
We like movies. We're going to talk about them. There you go. That's the description.
I don't know. I don't even know where to start. Like,
I guess I could get into mine, so you can.
Yeah, please.
I guess I could say a main reason why I really like film or movies, period. Of course, over time, it's developed, like with anybody. Like, when you're a kid, it's just like, oh, that was a nice movie, Land Before Time. Milo and Otis. I want to say I was probably 4, maybe 5 years old, and that's when I even at a young age, had an understanding of what cinematic storytelling was. Mm-hmm. There was a video store right by my house when I was a kid called Video Depot, and that was like the one place that just about every other day, whether it be my mom, my grandmother, would be renting movies from. So there was always an influx of, it was kind of like a revolving door of film in my house at the time. And we did the proverbial, you know, kids movies, you know, all sort of comedies, everything like that. And when I was a kid, up until my early teens, I was going to the movies just about every weekend. My mom would take my older brother and I to see anything and everything that we wanted, because I'm not going to lie, I was a spoiled little brat. But the one genre that I was kind of always drawn to, and I guess, and I don't want anybody out there being like, what, he was watching those as a kid? I turned out fine, so. But was horror movies, and as a young kid, 4 or 5 years old, watching those sorts of movies at that age, you would think, oh, kids shouldn't be watching this. But you have to have that system behind it, like the parental system, in the sense that my grandmother always let it be known, and so did my mom, that that's just movies, it's not real. Yeah. They would kind of they would explain special effects to me, you know, why that, you know, oh, somebody's getting the head chopped off, but here's why it's not real. And yet, when I was a kid, certain films scared me. But at the same time, I was like kind of enthralled in the fact that what you could do through, granted, as an adult, you look back and I'm like, that's terrible storytelling. But as a kid, those things were entertaining as hell. And that was like my main source of loving movies, was day in and day out, renting a new horror movie. And the thing that was nice about that video store by my house, too, was it was one of those ones where they didn't really care how old you were. It's like, oh yeah, you
some teenager behind the cash register being like, sure.
Yeah, you look old enough.
Walks out a bloody mess and you're just like, oh yeah.
Yeah. And it was the very first horror movie I ever saw. Well, there were two that I saw back to back. And you would think it would start off slow with, like, the children's friendly horror movies, like Monster Squad or stuff like that. I did end up seeing that. But my first two horror movies I ever saw was John Carpenter's Halloween and David Cronenberg's Rabid. Now, for those two to be the first two at, like, 5 years old, okay. the original Halloween is still probably one of my favorite movies of all time. Next to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which I love that movie. Yeah. And it from there, I was kind of given a personal film school, in a way, of what movies were out there simply by my family members. Like, my grandmother was the one that got me into Friday the 13th. Mm. I remember my aunt let me play the Friday the 13th NES game. And I want to say my very first, like, film-going memory was seeing the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in theaters. That was awesome. And even then, I would go to theaters to see horror movies, too. I remember seeing Child's Play 3 in the movie theater. And I forget which movie it was, because I might be screwing up my years here. But I have very vivid memory of seeing the trailer for the Super Mario Brothers movie in theaters. And I was excited as hell. Especially when, I didn't know what the hell was going on until there was... It may have been a teaser trailer, mm-hmm. but I remember sitting in the theater and seeing Dennis Hopper just do the whole plumbers line, and I'm like, it's Mario! Motherfuck! So it was good. My childhood was steeped largely in movies.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember, like, there were some movies that I saw as a kid that I just, oh, this is boring. That wasn't until I kind of got a little older, became a teenager, where I was like, oh, these are great movies. Like, for, like, horror. Like, before, when I was a kid, I thought the old Universal movies were boring as hell. Like, Dracula, Frankenstein, all that. I was like, this is doing nothing for me. Because when I was that young, I was first thrown into Halloween, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, all that stuff. And then, like, with The Exorcist, I was like, oh, this is stupid. But then as I became a teenager, I began to love it. And because I started off with the base, the basic, I guess you could say, horror films that people know, like Jason, Freddy, Michael Myers, all that. As years went on, I discovered, you know, Evil Dead and Texas Chainsaw Massacre and all that stuff simply through constant video rentals. So it was kind of like, at a young age, I was already doing the whole treasure hunt of what else is there, what else is there, what else is there. And now, being in my 30s, it's like too much. It's like too much of a horror movie, like, library in my head. But at the same time too, I really like comedies, but I really like very well written, like, dramatic, like, I don't know how to describe it. Movies that can glue you to your seat, and there's, like, no action, no comedy. It's just very well written story, like, character stories, character pieces. Especially on, like, a psychological level or whatever, that make you think. But I can also sit there and just want to watch 80 minutes of stupid and be entertained. And I think I want to say there are certain audiences out there that can be very nitpicky, where they only want smart. They can't suspend their disbelief. And I don't know, you gotta have fun with movies. Movies that were meant to be fun, not taken way too seriously. But, I don't know, for the longest time, for as long as I can remember, I've just absolutely loved movies. Jason, what about you?
I don't really know where to begin. Growing up, it was always, like, movies were the escape. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I had friends, but not as many as I probably would have liked, so turned to movies and, like, that land of fantasy and stuff like that. For me, obviously, like, Back to the Future is, like, you know, a seminal moment of my youth of, like, wow, this is amazing. This is something awesome that I'm connecting to with this. I don't know why, more than most people would. Like, most people, it's like, oh, that's a movie, whatever. I'll see the next one. I think Back to the Future for me is how other people view Star Wars or something like that. That's just my, you know, you come to my house and there's like a shrine of Back to the Future memorabilia. But that always stuck out. Like, for some reason, it's just drawn to it. And then growing up, like, you find your different thing. I was never much of a horror guy, although, like, now I can look back and appreciate certain elements of it. But, you know, growing up, it was always the fantasy adventures. Mm-hmm. It was just comedies. Like, mm-hmm. we revel in, like, how shitty, many shitty movies that we both just stupidly like
yeah.
we've talked Cop and a Half.
And oh, yeah,
Blank Man.
Because Cop and a Half is a masterpiece. Yeah.
It's a terrible masterpiece. Like,
Gone Fishing.
Yeah. I can think of what else. They're all downstairs on my shelf because yeah. I own all the DVDs of shit. And that's the other thing. I'm a massive like DVD collector. Even in this day, as like we're the dying out age mm-hmm. of DVD, like I look at that as a positive because everybody's ditching their movies and
yeah.
I'm hopping on the bandwagon. Be like, no, I want more movies. This on my phone, I have an archive that shows every movie I have, and it's like 500 plus movies.
Yeah.
I just want them. There's almost trophy like
yeah.
owning a DVD on a shelf where it's like, I now own like
yeah.
Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
Your soul is mine.
Especially there's some movies that like surprisingly are on DVD
yeah.
that will probably never get like a yeah. Blu-ray special edition. Even some movies on VHS where it's like, why isn't that on DVD? But
they'll be on digital randomly. Yeah. I've seen that now recently. I'm like, well, it must be just cheaper to be like, throw it up on digital.
Yeah, and they won't clean it up or anything. Yeah. So it's like, remember that movie? Here you go.
It's in 4x6.
Yeah.
It's like, it looks like shit. But
yeah.
No, and then growing up, like, I discovered, like, Clerks and Kevin Smith mm-hmm. and, like, really connected to all that stuff. And, like, the weirdest thing is, like, the Clerks I enjoyed, but, like, when they came out with the 10th anniversary, like, DVD thing.
They had a Clerks X
Yeah, set. They had a yeah. documentary. Mm-hmm. That kind of, like, oh, this is, like, I didn't even think of, like, that aspect of filmmaker, like, mm-hmm. oh, really? Like, you can yeah. make this shit. Like,
yeah.
you know, that led me to college. Like, mm-hmm. I have a degree in video production and mm-hmm. stuff like so.
Yeah.
That's where the road had taken me.
And I think that's what I like being able to do this with you is that you kind of, because you did go to school for yeah. it and all that stuff, but you also, along the way, because of Kevin Smith and your interest in him, his way of filmmaking gave you the interest in the filmmaking that you were also kind of able to teach yourself stuff along yeah. the way. And that's why I like being able to have the conversations with you about it, because you have that, you know, actual educational knowledge. And I've kind of taught myself, you know, certain things along the way and all that, but I'm more of the visual storyteller when it comes to like, oh, if I ever make a movie, I want to make sure it does this, has this.
The lighting
this,
looks this, as such.
You know, these camera angles, this, that, the other thing. Writing wise, because I have yeah. four scripts that have collected dust every time I go to revisit them or want to rewrite them and all that stuff. I'm like, Jesus Christ, these are terrible. Granted, like,
delete.
Granted, like, the first one I ever wrote was, oh, I think I was like 15 or 16, and that needs a massive rewrite. And it wasn't with the hope of making it someday, it was just kind of, well, I feel like writing one.
Because yeah. you can see it in your own head, like, oh, yeah. this is a story I would like to see. Not necessarily make, but just
yeah.
see told.
And, you know, there have been times where people are like, oh, we should do something together. I'm like, yeah, that'd be great. And I shoot them an idea. I'm like, yeah, let's do that. And then I'm just yeah. like, oh, yeah. The idea.
The logistics of it.
The idea and everything played out in my head. Yeah. So to me, it's complete in my head. But then it's like the actual doing it. And that's what sucks, because there are people that say, if you really want to do it and you have passion for it, you'll go and you'll yeah. do it. And then, but then there'll be the ones that like, if you're not doing it, you don't really love it. It's like, no, I do really love it, but I don't even want to get into that. I love film, yeah. so there you go. Seeing as this is a little offshoot of the wrestling podcast that we do, again, titled Marks on Commentary. This one is Marks on Film. Jason thought it would actually be a really good segueing point that we chronicle in our inaugural episode, just to kind of, you know, branch the two together mm-hmm. to talk about actual wrestling movies. You know, which most of them are duty.
A lot of them suck.
They're duty. And what was it? No Holds Barred?
There's that. Oh, yeah. That would probably be the more modern, I guess, mm-hmm. Wrestling film with Hogan.
No, we can't rule out Ready to Rumble.
Well, that's definitely more modern, in my book at least. But then mm-hmm. you have all the documentaries.
Yeah. You know more of the wrestling movies than I do.
So. No, I'm trying to go through. Wrestling with Shadows is a big one. I don't know if you want to get into specifics of what you thought of each. Or...
Oh, yeah, sure. Fuck it.
So I've actually only seen No Holds Barred and like bits and pieces and stuff like that.
Yeah, I know I've seen it like beginning to end, but I, for the love of God, I couldn't tell you the last time I actually watched it.
Yeah, it. I don't know.
Because I remember the whole the dude pooping his pants and then the knockoff Vince McMahon character getting electrocuted at the end. That's really all I remember. But, I mean, you could talk about Hogan's other movies. Yeah, but not wrestling related. You know,
I mean, I'll count those as wrestling related movies.
If it's not a special edition yet, it very well should be. I don't know why we haven't gotten, you know, special edition Blu-ray with like a 2-hour making of for Suburban Commando. I love that movie.
I like it. I think I like Mr. Nanny better.
I think I saw that one time.
Really?
Just because of Hogan and the, what was he, in a ballerina suit?
Yeah.
And, like, good God. And I did not watch, what was it, Thunder in Paradise, that show?
That was probably actually my introduction to, like, Hogan.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I'm probably seeing Hogan somewhere else, being like, oh, yeah, that's a wrestling guy. But, like, as far as, like, watching him consistently, I used to fucking Destination. Before I knew, like, anything, like, of wrestling, like, it was all Thunder in Paradise. Like, yeah. I loved that show. Like, I remember, like, Sting being on it, playing a bad guy, which is such a weird...
And they were all, like... What was it? They were all doing like this workout on the beach thing.
They're always working out on the
beach. A bunch of other WCW.
Are we talking the show? Because there's a show and then there's a movie.
Oh, okay.
Too. Like, no, but the show was always my go-to. I don't think I've actually ever seen the Thunder in Paradise movie. I think there's a couple of them.
Maybe?
I don't know.
I could. Oh, fuck.
I know there's a CDI game of it.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, that show was destination viewing for me. I'm trying to think other wrestling related or Hogan related. There's a Karate Kids movie.
Something about, because I only remember like Three Ninjas and Three Ninjas Kick Back. What the hell? Something about a mountain. I forget the name of it.
Thunder Mountain or something.
Yeah, something. Yeah, this horrible haircut.
What other Hogan era movies? I mean, he's got cameos and Gremlins and shit like that, but
yeah,
but that's probably his better acting than the other ones. Fuck
yeah. But as for documentaries, I remember Wrestling with Shadows. I think the first time I saw that was on A&E way back in the day, before I even knew that there was a DVD for it.
Yeah,
I was like, what's this? And I thought it was pretty great.
Seeing the advertisements in, like, I don't think it was WB magazine, but it was like one of those other 50 million pro wrestling magazines when we were a kid.
Pro Wrestling Illustrated or something like that.
And being like, what the fuck is this? And and then Christmas one year, I got like a gift card to Coconuts Music Store or something like that. Yeah.
Coconuts.
Way back. And it was on the shelf and I'm like, oh, I can buy that. Finally, we'll figure out what it is. I didn't even know it was a documentary. I was just like, oh, I saw Bret Hart. Check it out. It's an awesome look at like that time and just the coincidence of when it was shot. And
yeah, I didn't own that documentary until, I don't remember how many years ago now, but the one that I ended up buying ended up being like a 2-disc set, where the main one was Wrestling with Shadows, but then the same people that did that one put out one about Owen Hart.
Oh yeah,
that's the one I have. And it was pretty good.
And then after that, it's Beyond the Mat, which is another great documentary for wrestling.
And as for like actual wrestling-related movies, I thought The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke was fantastic.
A grim look at the dark side of the business, like, but he was phenomenal. He did a great job. He looked the part. I thought they captured like the kind of like sadness of like, oh, there's these guys in the VFW and they're, you know, it's today they're selling VHS copies of their old movies and
what they have to do to get by too, because knowing that just doing a couple indie shows here and there for people their age, they can't get by and just that money, so working a deli, putting your hand in the cheese slicer or whatever.
I have you. And While we're talking, we can't forget Ready to Rumble, which is...
Sometimes I want to forget Ready to Rumble. The
scary movie of 2000s pro wrestling.
Jesus Christ. That movie. The fact that it happened, it's a testament to celluloid being used where it could have been used on something else.
What was that? Is it Conrad Thompson that was saying that? Somebody was saying that John Goodman was supposed to play the lead role of
Jimmy King?
Yeah.
Dude, that would have been awesome.
Yeah.
I would have preferred John Goodman in that role over...
Who knows why he didn't.
What's his name? All I remember... Because I remember...
Oliver Platt.
Oliver Platt, yeah. Because I remember him being one of the two, quote-unquote, bad guys in Beethoven, that dog movie, where him and what's his name, you know, kidnap the dogs. Stanley Tucci?
Yeah.
Because I remember them kidnapping the dogs and Stanley Tucci's character having the wicked fancy pair of shoes on and having the high-pitched, like, woman scream. Yeah. There you go, fucking... okay. Because it's not wrestling, but still movie talk. I remember watching Beethoven's second more than the first Beethoven.
Really?
Only because I thought that scene in Beethoven's second was awesome as hell when, at that party, the deck, like, collapsed and all that shit.
Yeah.
And the boyfriend or whoever the fuck ended up, like, doing this really cool, like, swan dive move off and all that stuff to land in the sand. But they also had that, like, stereotypical, you know, added-in scream. The one that's in, like, every movie.
Oh, the Wilhelm scream. Yeah,
they had that thrown in there. I'm like, this scene's awesome! Rewind. Play it again. Rewind. Play it again. You always hear those stories about, you know what certain people were doing when they were watching the scene on VHS because the tape would run out? Like, for me, I thought that scene was cool.
Yeah.
But
I thought you would have liked the first one where the car busts through the wall and all the shot, the, like, syringes, like, going to the guy's chest. Is that... I think that's Beethoven.
Is that Beethoven?
Yeah.
That sounds fucked up. I don't remember. Yeah. See, I have more memories of the second one than the first one.
Because, like, they were going to put down the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I don't know why. Whatever. Science.
Science
was the explanation. An evil vet. And they bust through this wall. And the guy's about to do it. And there's, like, a tray full of, like, syringes. Which, I don't know if it makes sense. Like, to put down a dog. Like, why you need, like, 50 syringes. But... the car hits the tray, and they all go into the guy's chest.
I need to rewatch this because I don't remember that.
I feel like that's part of it. Watch, I'm thinking of some other, like,
you probably. I wonder if you're thinking of that movie, Man's Best Friend, with Lance Hendrickson with the evil, like, I don't want to say it's a robot because it's been forever since I've watched it. That's another one I need to rewatch. Or I just remember the dog climbing up a tree to swallow a cat whole. That movie was terrible. It had Ally Sheedy in it. She's like, remember I was in The Breakfast Club, you guys. Then I did a sequel to that movie, Buried Alive. Did you ever see that?
What's that?
Buried Alive.
I don't.
It was a wicked good, kind of like made-for-TV movie. I remember seeing it when it first aired. I think it was on USA. And it had Tim Matheson from Animal House in it. And I want to say Jennifer Jason Leigh, I believe. And, you know, the man that has no dick from Ghostbusters. It had to do with this wife decides to, like, kind of poison her husband to kind of get, like, his, I want to say his money or whatever, some shit like that. And then Dickless here was kind of sleeping with the dude's wife and all that. She poisoned them and it made it look like a heart attack and all that. And because of logic... So something happened during the embalming session where they weren't actually able to embalm him, so they just decided to bury him without embalming him, and Tim Matheson wasn't really dead. And then I thought the scene to this day is so cool, the way, like, Tim Matheson ends up, like, waking up in his coffin, under, like, being buried alive, and just him realizing and all that stuff, and him having to, because they put him in a cheap-ass coffin because his wife was a bitch. And it's like the old wood, and he's like breaking through, and because it's raining, of course, and you got the mud coming through, and then there's a shot. Well, there's a really cool shot once he realizes, holy shit, I'm buried alive, where it's kind of like right over, like, an aerial view of the camera coming down, and then, like, the camera goes through the dirt and zooms in on his face screaming and all that shit, and it's like hands coming through the mud and all that. And then it gets, like, really, like, haha, gotcha, bitch, like, Tales from the Crypt, kind of, somebody's getting their comeuppance at the end, where he, I think he's something with, he does something to the two of them where they're kind of knocked out. I have to rewatch it, because I don't remember. But then he, because he was a construction worker, like, contractor or something like that, while they're knocked out, he totally, like, builds wooden walls throughout the house like it's a maze and all that shit, and they have to get through it. It's crazy. And then at the end, of course, they're both of them are buried alive with all of his money, so it's like, fuck you, bitch. It was a good movie. And then another one, I know we're kind of not talking about wrestling movies now, that's but fine. Hey, it happens.
Let's take it on a tangent because we don't know where.
Yeah, screw it, we didn't know where we were going, so let's just talk. I want to say there was another one that I saw as a kid. It was called The Midnight Hour.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really good movie. It takes place around Halloween time, and I believe it's a New England town. It has LeVar Burton in it, and it's really, really good. It had to do with this kid that was doing this. Now, they're supposed to be teenagers in school. One of the kids is actually Dom DeLuise's son, one of his sons. But it's clearly the whole, these are teenagers, but they're in their late 20s. Let's run with it. Still a great movie, though. And it had to do with this character who it said she was a witch, but she's also a vampire. And when she comes back after these kids decide to take stuff out of a local museum and all that, and they kind of fuck with the, you know, forces of nature, I guess you could say. And people are, yeah, the dead are rising from the graves and all that. And then a werewolf shows up. Just run with it. And there's a Halloween party going on. I'm just kind of like throwing things out that I remember, just to try and sell you on it by the sheer weirdness of it. And like this girl that was like from the 50s. Everybody that came back from the dead looked dead, except this girl that was like from the 50s that was still in her proverbial like 50s garb with like the long flowing dress and all that blonde hair and all that crap. And there's a musical number. It's just it's fun and bizarre, and why that hasn't received any sort of special edition is beyond me. But it's a great movie to especially watch around like Halloween time too. I sold that movie to you terribly. But trust me, watch it. It's good. Sean says check it out.
It's Sean's seal of approval.
I just kind of ripped off what Joe Bob Briggs says. Oh, there's another memory I could tell.
Sure.
Shit. One staple of my childhood, too, was every Friday or Saturday night, my mom, my older brother, and I, no matter what, on TNT, would always watch Joe Bob Briggs' Monster Vision.
Mm.
Or it could be Joe Bob Briggs' Summer School, or, you know all that stuff. And that was where a lot of my introduction to film came from, too. Because, especially with him being back now on Shudder, and he's kind of doing it for a new generation, but also for people that grew up with it. It's kind of like an every weekend film school, in a way. Where you had this guy, Joe Bob Briggs, that he'd be showing you, probably, to anybody else, probably the worst horror movies. But also the greatest horror movies. And he'd kind of introduce it. But as the movie went along, he wasn't just saying, you know, oh, in this scene this happened, in this scene this happened. He would do that. But he would take the time to actually tell you, like, making of stories, behind the scenes stories. You know, actually tell you, like, historical, like, film stories and stuff like that. So it was always like you were hanging out with this guy that was just...
That's cool.
Spitballing all this film history to you. And that went on for a long time, and when that went away, like, there was no, you know, finale or anything like that. It was just, there was a final episode one night, wasn't even promoted as a final episode, and it just never came back until late last year.
Mm-hmm.
They finally did the last drive-in on Shudder, where he did I think it was a 12-hour marathon of horror movies and stuff like that. And then the response to that was so great that they did like Thanksgiving one, they did Christmas, and now we're in the middle of doing, I think it's 8 or 9 weeks straight every Friday night, two movies back to back. So it was cool to see him back. And I remember meeting him at a convention a couple years ago. And this was before his new show had started up and everything. And all I wanted to tell him was literally, because I go to conventions just every year to meet the celebrities that I grew up watching and like idolizing and appreciating their work. But when I met him, the only thing I wanted to tell him was, I just wanted to say thank you. And to be able to shake his hand and say thank you, because I owe a lot of my love for cinema. I mean, it started with my mom and grandmother, but my love for cinema and all that goes into it, especially for the genre that I love so much, I owe to him. So to be able to like look him in the eyes and say thank you and all that, that's pretty cool. And I don't know, I think it'd be cool if you met Michael J. Fox one day.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the thing that like scares me is like I'm running out of time. Like, and I don't really, you're an avid like convention thing, and that's never really been my thing. I would go, but it's like, I would love to meet Michael J. Fox. I would like to meet Christopher Lloyd and stuff like that.
Well, that
even
was
Robert Zemeckis.
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah. That'd be cool. I'd end up saying to Robert Zemeckis, I'm like, thank you for actually, you know, getting The Frighteners made. And I know Peter Jackson directed it, but because that was originally going to be a Tales from the Crypt episode, but then it was like, no, this is
good enough.
Good enough to be a movie, and I love that movie. The Frighteners is great. I kind of wish Michael J. Fox talked a bit more about it.
Yeah.
But
have you seen that clip where he's like, they're doing the outtake and he just blurts out Doc?
Yeah, instead of Judge, he yells Doc. And he's like, wait, I'm in the wrong movie. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, when you were talking about how you want to meet certain celebrities and you kind of feel like you're getting to that point of running out of time. Not for yourself, but for them. That's how it was when I met George Romero. I want to say it was maybe the year after meeting him that he had passed away. Wow. It was like, damn.
Yeah.
Because it was one of those things of when I found out he was going to be at the Rock and Shock Convention, I was like, if I don't meet him now, I don't know if I'm going to get it.
Yeah.
So it was great to meet, you know, George Romero for, you know, the godfather of zombie movies. So that was cool. I think I've met just about everyone I've wanted to meet just to kind of show my appreciation and thanks for all that they've kind of done for cinema and for me as a fan.
Yeah.
There's probably two more bucket list ones. I saw John Carpenter in concert when he was going around on tour with his son and his godson performing all the themes to all of his movies and everything. But I haven't actually been able to sit down and say, dude, thank you.
Yeah.
And I will finally be able to check off one of them this October, which is Bruce Campbell.
That's cool.
So, yeah, that'll be a good time. When I met Elvira last year, I was like, yep.
Bucket list.
Finally. And I remember meeting Robert Englund. That was pretty sweet. Because when I showed up at that convention, knowing he was going to be there, that was the first one I went to. Because I was like, it'll be the most expensive. Yeah. I need to, you know, get this done. And it's a good time, but then it kind of hits me too when I'm like, wait, once I meet the last two, I'm like, is there really no one else? I don't know.
Well,
I don't
try know. And expand your list to like,
yeah, it's like, oh, you played that role in that one thing, sure, but I don't know. And then that's another thing too. I don't know if it's a thing so much these days anymore. I think people have kind of gotten around to it. The one thing I noticed once I finally kind of became a part of it, like the horror movie community, back in the day, and I want to say, especially around like, I hate to bring it up, but around the time of like Columbine happening, anybody that was into that type of stuff was definitely looked down upon.
Like vilified, like it's your fault.
Like, yeah, like anybody that was into anything that was a little different was viewed differently and treated like shit. But if people actually would give, you know, the time to talk to these people, then anybody that's into horror movies or into, because the thing I came to realize, because the first time I went to a convention, I didn't know what I was in for.
Yeah.
But I learned very quick that people in the horror movie community, whether it be the actual filmmakers or the actors or the people that just love these movies, are probably the most down-to-earth, nicest people I have ever met. They stick together. They're always there to pick each other up. There is a subsect of that online, though, where they'll sit there and all they'll do is complain and try and make people, make people feel like shit. But that's internet culture as a whole.
As we've seen with pro wrestling.
Yeah. And I just don't get it.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. But I want to say my first taste of actually being part of a community for film, like horror movies, was... It was pre-Jason X. I want to say 2000, maybe. And I discovered the Friday the 13th forum. Mm-hmm. I think it was like a V-bulletin board or something like that, maybe. And to this day, I still talk to some of the guys that I had come to know. That's like 19 years later.
Wow.
Jesus Christ. I'm friends with some of them on Facebook. It's still kind of going to this day. Now it's just a Facebook group on Facebook because there was some like late teenage drama / early people that were in their early 20s drama started up that I wasn't involved with. I just saw it unfold and I'm like, this is kind of stupid. But the main core of people that never really had a problem with each other were just fans still. And we don't even really talk about Friday the 13th movies all that much anymore. We just actually talk about film.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, hey, I just watched this, that, the other thing. But it's cool to still have that connection with people that you randomly came across online so many years later. It's like we grew up, you know, over the years.
Like-minded. And,
yeah. So I think that's really cool. I don't know if, like, you have, like, a certain...
I've never really been into, like, community stuff. Mm-hmm. I think it's basically because I didn't have a computer growing up until, mm-hmm. like, much later in my life. And mm-hmm. by that point, I think forums were pretty much a dying mm-hmm. thing. So, mm-hmm. but...
And there were, like, the Angel Fire sites and tripod sites. And, and I think I had a couple of, what the hell were they called? AOL Homestead, mm-hmm. where you could create your own web page. And you didn't even need to know HTML. It was all the, like, paste and drag and, you know, fucking type this, type that, and then you'd publish it. But you can only, like, view it if you had, like, an AOL Hometown account or something like that. I had a couple horror movie ones, but I remember I had a wrestling one. I don't remember the name of it, but instead of doing wrestling news, all I focused on was whenever anything was happening with Kane and The Undertaker. I think I called it like the Creeper's Crypt or something stupid like that. I think that was the name of somebody else's site. I don't remember what it was. But I remember the banner was just Undertaker's head on one side, Kane's head on the other, with a couple of flames, and then the name of it. And I'm like, here's what Undertaker and Kane did this week.
You know that's like sitting on a server somewhere in like Missouri on like a dead system. Hunt it down, find it. No, buddy. I don't know. Lost my train of thought.
Hey, it happened.
Yeah.
Now I'm wondering, like, should we do movie reviews at some point, kind of do commentaries?
Yeah, we can. I'm not limited this to anything. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we pop in a movie and watch it through and through, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe we talk about what we've seen recently and, mm-hmm. you know.
Because I will admit, I am going to say this right now, I was not as prepared as I should have been today. Because I thought it would have been kind of like with the wrestling one, it's so easy just to have the conversation. But I guess for an introductory episode...
Yeah, it's tough. I like movies, but it's like...
I like movies!
Well, I mean, we do, but we don't, I guess, go to, like, movies news sites, but there's mm-hmm. not, like, the drama, I guess, necessarily.
True,
or the drama is very more corporate, where it's like, mm-hmm. Sony's not playing ball with Marvel right now, you know?
Yeah. Like, the whole logistical, you know, company stories aspect or whatever, that's just like, oh, okay, so that's happening. But then I don't have a huge opinion
on it.
But I think it's kind of like a nice go back, talk about this, talk about that type of thing.
I mean, we could talk about the highest grossing movie of all time, I guess, now.
Like, yeah.
That's in the social conscience right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure everybody's had enough of the Avengers at this point, but...
Yeah.
But I like, I don't know. What did you?
I thought it, I really liked it.
I loved it. I think it is a bad movie, but a great final chapter, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't think it has as much rewatchability as Infinity War will. I think we'll get past it and people will be like, it ended all the characters exactly where it needed to, but in terms, I don't know. It just, I don't think it's like a, all the, I feel like every other Marvel movie you can rewatch and rewatch. This one, less of that in my mind. I didn't hate it. I'm not shitting on it. You know, I got emotional like throughout it, but I think it's less rewatchability.
I can agree with that, yeah. Because while it had the moments that were supposed to be impactful, emotional, and all that stuff, and 3 hours long.
Exactly.
I think Infinity War, I don't want to say tone-wise, but execution-wise is what Endgame should have been.
Sure.
Because when you're, I think with any movie, when you automatically introduce time travel, you're going to lose people.
Yeah. Even I'm still like, how did this happen? And I'm trying to pay attention to it where I took my wife to it and she's just like, whatever, it's fun. But I'm like, I need to know the logistics of this. Like the
And to try and do logistical time travel.
At least theory of it. Like, yeah, if you're going to set a rule, like, okay, that's the rule. Mm-hmm. But don't, like, 20 minutes before be like, well, we changed that.
Yeah. And I know people are upset about Fat Thor.
I had no problem
with it. It didn't bother me. A lot of the complaints I've been seeing online didn't bother me whatsoever. The only thing that I'm kind of about that didn't have as much of an impact as I wanted it to was when we finally see Thanos turn to dust. I'm like, well, yeah, but that's not the one that fucked all their shit up. That's the one that's going to fuck all their shit up. But it hasn't gotten to that point with that guy yet.
Yeah.
It's just the that's the Thanos that was just starting to want to screw shit up. So it's like, eh. And to, it's like,
there were points of that movie where you're like, oh, like, Thanos just shows up and everybody's there like, yep, he's here. Like, that kind of, I was just like, well, shouldn't we be like, how did he get here? Like, a little bit, figure out the situation a little bit more than versus Cap and Thor and Iron Man being like, I guess we're going to go kick his ass now. Like, yeah, but you should be asking the question, like, how the fuck did he get here?
Yeah, and then the whole, oh, because of the snap. And then Captain Marvel shows up and it's all like, no, he's over here. I don't, you know, he's doing this. And then Nebula's just like, no, I know where he goes. It's like,
even that doesn't make sense because, like, Iron Man shows up and they're all, like, trying to figure out, like, do you know where he is? Do you know where he is? And then Nebula's like, I know where he is.
Yeah.
And then even that isn't an explanation. And Rocket's like, oh, there's a power surge thing over here. Yeah. And then 2 days ago, it was over here. Where were you with this information 10 minutes ago when we were, I don't know.
And then just to have him just, I mean, it was cool to see him get his head chopped off.
Yeah, but it was a funny moment. And then I do like the time jump in 5 years because that's, it's different because it raises a lot more questions going forward. And the fact that they're like, oh, we're here now. Like, we're 5 years in the future. We're not going back 5 years to fix everything. That's not how this is going to.
It's just there were parts of it where I was like, I wish they focused more on certain things more than they focused on what they did.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I did like it.
I'm not shitting on it.
I was happy. Yeah, I was happy with it too. It was a good, you know, end of that phase of the Marvel movies. Now I'm just really wondering where they're gonna go with Phase 4.
Is it 4? Yeah. But I count this as like a, I don't know, like a second, because we're going to go on this journey again in my mind of 10, 20 movies.
Yeah.
Down the lines, so. And what's the next big thing?
And I know they're doing the whole multiverse thing now.
Which I don't, if you're referring to the Spider-Man thing, I don't necessarily know if I believe that yet.
Because I know they kind of touched on that with this most recent movie because of all the time travel shit and what they did and the snaps and all that. Which would be awesome if they were able, because of what's happening company wise or whatever. It would be cool if they were able to do what they wanted to do with the Into the Spider-Verse thing, where they were actually going to have Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire show up. If they could actually do that with the actual actors this time, I think that'd be pretty sweet. I think it lends itself to something that could be really cool. But as
cool,
for
but
what,
then there's also a complication of like,
yeah,
I don't know.
And I am looking forward to the whole Disney Plus show of the them actually adapting the comic storylines of What If.
Yeah,
or I think that's the name of them.
The one-offs.
So. Yeah, you know, what if so and so was this? What if Captain America was a lady? What if, you know, Spider-Man was actually this? You know, what if the Fantastic Four were, you know, whatever? That'd be cool. I kind of wish those were movies instead, but
I get the television shows because you could probably cover a lot more ground.
Yeah, in,
especially if they're like one-off episodes of like, boom, we're doing a Spider-Man episode,
and with the whole. I think, I haven't seen much people talk about it, but I know there's a few of them that are like, why is Mysterio a good guy? He's a bad guy. It's like, well,
we'll get there.
We'll get there, and I'll explain it for you that don't get it, and if that means I'm spoiling something for a movie that hasn't even come out yet, sorry, I know what I'm talking about. Mysterio is the biggest bullshit liar of Spider-Man's villains. Maybe.
Yeah.
He's a fucking asshole.
But then people get mad. I look at it as like each movie is trying to tell you the same story a different way. Like, so a bad guy told this way is a different, you know, a twist on it. Like every Marvel movie is a twist on the last one or a different one. Or
like all the stuff in the trailers and previews and clips and all that of Mysterio like fighting these creatures and all that stuff to try and save the day or whatever is to make himself look good.
Yeah.
To make people think that he's actually a good guy when he's actually the one projecting those images. Making it, you know, whatever, and then Spider-Man's like, oh, I'm gonna fight this fucking, you know, aquarium-sized head dude or whatever.
I'm actually looking forward to that a lot now, like, the post-snap world, like, that's the one thing I don't think we got enough of in the movie of, like, I want to see, like, how everything has changed. Like, there's a couple overhead shots and fields and stuff like that, but it's like, no, I want to see, like, how the world is really reacting, like...
I'm hoping in the new Spider-Man, because there was that scene in the trailer where Mary Jane or whatever was basically, you know, saying to Peter Parker, you know, it's obvious you're Spider-Man or whatever. I really hope that's just like a joke scene.
Because she is that kind of character, like, just to call something out randomly and be like, oh, you're Spider-Man.
Yeah, I hope that's just a joke scene because I don't want Spider-Man to be turned into the whole Iron Man thing, which Tony Stark admitting to being Iron Man. That makes sense because that's his character, okay? That's what it's known for. I don't even need to explain that because that's a thing in the
comic. But I think the whole point of the movie was be like, you can't be the next Iron Man. All you can be is the first Spider-Man. Like, I think that's ultimately...
I just don't... Because to me, Spider-Man is one of those characters that doesn't... Other people around him, besides Mary Jane down the line, I guess, need to know that it's Peter Parker. Cause, and now his little fat friend there. I forget his name.
Oh, shit. I know what you're talking about.
But, I don't want to get into Venom because I did not like that movie.
I didn't hate it. It is already handicapped because it's not a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I thought I liked, what's his face?
Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy. I thought he was decent in the role. I more or less look forward to, like, the next one with Carnage, because I'm trying to, like, picture how...
Just as long as they get that Ronald McDonald wig off of Woody Harrelson's head.
But he actually probably would pull it off pretty awesomely, like...
I would just tell Woody Harrelson, like, if I was, like, the director or whatever, just be like, okay, just play your natural born killer's role, and that's Carnage right there, just do it. And I'd be like, oh my god...
But I want to see that world, like, that he hatches of, like, just death and destruction, which, unfortunately, probably won't be as bad as it could be, like, on a PG-13 level, but...
Because I think that's the reason why I wasn't such a huge fan of Venom, because they were all, like, kind of talking it up of, this is a Venom movie people want, you're gonna have this, and this, that, the other thing, but they were kind of skating around the whole R-rating thing, and it's like, nope, you'll get what you want, blah, blah, and then it's like, PG-13, and I'm like... And I know there's always that argument, you know... Just because it's PG-13 doesn't mean it's not going to be good. for certain. Sure. For me, it's when a story is kind of known for being
sure
touching upon that R, you gotta give it that. And I think that's why Logan was an amazing movie. It was finally nice to actually finally see, you know, Wolverine be violent and there'd be actual blood. And that movie was just amazing.
Yeah, like, it was great.
The writing in that film was great. Just the way it was shot, everything. That was a good end for the character, to the point where I don't want them to I know they'll have the rights to do it. I don't want it to be incorporated into any new Marvel movies.
Give it time. It's too soon still.
Yeah.
I think their best bet is, like, let the franchise get lost. I think, if anything, that they grab first, they'll do a Fantastic Four movie first.
Yeah, to make up for that.
All of
that Fan Four stick that came out.
I liked Venom more than I liked Aquaman. I didn't really...
I
don't know. Aquaman didn't do it for me. I know people... I found it very boring.
Yeah, I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. People try to keep selling me on the DC movies, and I'm like,
hits in their moments.
I liked Batman vs. Superman when I first saw it in theaters, but then when I like bought the Blu-ray and I watched it again, I'm like, no thanks.
No.
There's hints where you're like, oh, if you just went a little more like this, great. But then...
Yeah. And I don't know. I still haven't even seen Wonder Woman.
So that was better. Like, I thought that's probably been their better outing of all of them. You know, you can fault, like, who the main villain is, but ultimately it's probably one of their better, interesting movies.
Mm-hmm. And Justice League, given all the studio stuff and the director stuff and this, that, the other thing.
Just a pile of shit.
At the end of the day, it was just a horrible movie.
They tried to jam an incomplete MCU into one movie where it's like, people are meeting people, and it's not even like, it's like, shouldn't it be a bigger deal that these two people are on screen at the same time?
Or... Yeah, it was definitely one of those things where, oh, it worked for this, let's just skip the build up and just, it doesn't work that way.
But, I don't know, hopefully, the Joker movie looks awesome.
Yeah.
So...
I think as long as they're not trying to, like, build a cinematic universe for DC, then it's fine. Just
the immediate time, I think they need to just do good single movies and then come back to the idea.
I'm fine with DC movies from this point forward as long as they're not trying still to build to a shared universe thing. Just give me individual movies. I don't want them to... For DC, they need to just do individual stuff with no connection at the end, because it's like, because I prefer singular DC stories. This Batman 1989 is the best Batman movie. So,
what would you think if they started that franchise up again, the 1989 version?
And
they built their cinematic universe off of that. Think about it.
Well, here's the thing. I know other people share it too, but I've always felt that they need to make a Batman Beyond movie.
Mm-hmm.
But have it be tied to Tim Burton's original two Batman movies. Simply because in Batman Beyond, you have an older Bruce Wayne who's kind of the... I don't know how to describe it. But he's the one that's... You know, on Terry McGinnis, I think is his name, as the new Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And just for this, if they were to do a Batman Beyond movie, what better way to do that than have Michael Keaton, who is the age that Bruce Wayne was in the Batman Beyond cartoon, come back as Bruce Wayne? That'll tie it back right there. That's like I was even seeing people say the best way to try and get... Because Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is still kind of a hot commodity, but the Michael Bay movies, and you have all these weird cartoons out now, and I don't know what the hell they're doing, and now they're coming out with a Batman versus Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles thing, but people still love the original 1990 movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 90 or 91. The thing is, people like going back and connecting back to original stuff a lot. I think what they need to do is go back to that.
Yeah,
like do a follow up to that one. Get Secret of the Ooze out of here.
That's not even the. We don't even need to. That one's tolerable.
Yeah.
Versus the fucking third.
The third movie is fucking. I think all the turtles got cancer. They looked terrible. But if you could go back and actually have it be people in the suits again, and actually have that grungy look to it, dirty. Like the whole movie was just gray.
It holds up.
Yeah,
like,
it does.
That's the thing. Like,
and I was so close to ordering the vinyl soundtrack because I watched Ninja Turtles the other day, mm-hmm. and I'm listening to the music. I'm like, I forgot how great the music is in that movie. And if you could just do that again,
and it's fucking rubber suits.
Yeah,
like. Okay, maybe I don't know who's left for the original voices and whatnot, mm-hmm. but
get Corey Feldman to do it again. He'll do it. Shit,
he's got Corey Angels. He needs fucking help.
Yeah, fuck it.
But that would be amazing. Like,
yeah,
you can set it in modern time and like just a quick like do a quick explanation of what they were involved in for the last 20 years and
I don't know.
Casey Jones, fucking like people would fucking lose their mind over that.
They would. And and of course you have companies that are just looking at the dollar sign. If they're looking at the dollar sign, they have such easy things out there that they could just say, well I don't think it'd be easy because obviously it'd be more expensive than somebody sitting at a computer. But, you know, CGIing these things. But just, I think people appreciate, are kind of coming around to appreciating the practical effects again. Not as much as I'd like it. To see again.
It's the mixture of mm-hmm. both that really help.
But I can't suspend my disbelief anymore for certain things. Like, I don't want to, like, say, you know, oh, when I saw all these CGI in Avengers, I couldn't. Well, because that's that.
Yeah.
You can with that. But with certain things like Sonic the Hedgehog, that looks horrible.
And you're not even placating the original fan base because you're like somebody along the ice, some artist was like, I'm gonna make it my own. Yeah. Like, no, like,
yeah. And somebody could say, well, Sonic CG, what do you think about Pikachu? I'm like, I think all the Pokemon in the previews I've seen, and I wasn't even that big in the Pokemon, I just watched a cartoon as a kid, I never played games, none of that shit. It looked good.
It looks faithful to the source material.
It does. And with stuff like that, where you're CGIing a character that, you know, was a fucking cartoon to begin with, so shut up. It looks, that's how they should look. Not, what the hell am I looking at? And with Ninja Turtles or whatever, no. Give me people in rubber suits. I don't care if I saw their real mouths at certain points and all that, and like their actual like flesh at the wrist and all that. I don't care.
That's what CJ's for. Cover up all that shit. Yeah. Take away the mouth that I don't see there, you know.
I don't know what Jim Henson's studio now is.
Looks like.
Or what, you know, whatever. But just don't make it look like, what the hell was that Ninja Turtle show when they incorporated, they incorporated that female turtle.
I remember.
Yeah, don't do that. And don't do the Broadway show or whatever the hell it was where they were singing and dancing on stage. Don't do that. Just give me dirty, grungy Ninja Turtles again. Because the first Ninja Turtles movie was still a kid movie, but it dealt with a lot of like serious adult shit.
Walk that line of like,
even
an R-rated Ninja Turtle movie would be fascinating. More faithful to the like original comics. Yeah, the
original comics were
like, haven't done that yet.
Yeah.
Are you really going to fuck up this franchise? No.
And that's why I think, like, don't get me wrong, when The Mask, Jim Carrey came out, I was a kid, I loved it, I thought it was great, that's another thing, we could do a Jim Carrey episode sometime, because we grew up during when he was a huge friggin' thing. I liked The Mask, I haven't watched it in forever though, but I found out after the fact that it was comic book first, and when I discovered the comic book from my local library when I was a kid, that comic book was so graphic and bloody and violent that as I got older, I'm like, I want to see that. I want to see that movie because that comic book was fucked up. They incorporated some of the comic book stuff into the Jim Carrey movie, but know, the kid-friendly version, the Tex Avery cartoonish stuff. But I think there are certain things that if we go back to the well and actually kind of go back to source materials, if we were to adapt what they were originally supposed to be, I think people would be more up to watch those now, more especially because people are like, no, just there was a reason why it was good to begin with. And there's no point of changing it. I don't know.
No, I'm with.
Anyway.
Yep.
Anything else, or should we?
No. I think that's cool for our first episode. If you're down, we got a good. We found the good conversation eventually.
Yeah. So I know we kind of went all over the place in this episode because a little bit unprepared, but hey, it happens. Well, we have kinks to work out. We have a couple things of WD-40 to kind of spring on this podcast here, but we'll get around to it. Over time, things shall get better. But for Marks on Movies, I am Sean.
I'm Jason.
And hopefully they clean up the stickiness of the theater floor on your way out.